Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His love endures forever. Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of the Cape Elizabeth Church of the Nazarene in Cape Elizabeth, Maine. Download more sermons or learn about the Cape Elizabeth Church of the Nazarene at our website, capenazarene.org. Here's this week's message.
So as I begin today, there's a few things that I want to try to hit on in the beginning, and then I'll try to focus a little bit more on something else in the end. All that to kind of be a teaser to say that if you don't come to Bible study, you should come to Bible study, because we'll be able to talk about a lot more symbols than I can talk about this morning. Because symbols matter. Symbols are important, especially in the book of Revelation. It is one of the most symbolic books in the entire Bible. In Eugene Peterson's commentary, Reverse Thunder, if I recall correctly, I think he says there's over 300 allusions to the Old Testament in this book, that you can't go more than a verse or two without hitting another allusion to something. And so symbols are important. Even today, I was telling Bruce that the reason I'm wearing this today is because I was pretty much out of clean clothes. But I also think about, as I stand here and I think about this little white piece, that when I've worn it out in the community, people instantly know what my job is. When I'm getting tea at the local buzz, people come up to me and they instantly know that I'm a pastor, and they say, "Hey, can I talk to you about something real quick?" Because it's a symbol. I'm not out saying, "Yes, I'm a pastor," but the symbol says that I am. And so symbols are important. And so there's just a few that I want to talk about this morning, and then a couple more that we can talk about on Tuesday night. But one of them is the symbol of the throne. The throne represents God. Whenever we see the throne being talked about, we know that God is being talked about there. It's interesting to me, though, that John is brought up into heaven, and he sees God, and he sees the glory of God. And what does John do? He describes the throne, and he describes what's happening around the throne, and he describes what's coming from the throne. Because how could John even begin to describe the glory of God that he's coming into contact with? So he has to settle to describe the throne, which is a symbol of God. We see that from the throne came flashes of lightning and rumblings and peals of thunder, which this is a typical description of a theophany, or an appearance of God, an inbreaking of God into our present reality and where we are. If you look back to like the story of Moses, you see this happening. Or some of the other theophanies that happen throughout the Old Testament. Or even, I think of the Transfiguration and how Jesus appeared like a bright light to them. And I think of that being almost like lightning, just this blinding light that knocked over the disciples. The glory of God is just too much for John to describe. And so he does the best that he can, and he makes use of the symbols that he can. One of the things about this throne room that John is taken to in heaven is that in many ways, if we've been listening these last couple weeks, this shouldn't shock us, but in many ways, it mirrors Rome. It mirrors the way that the emperor of Rome had his throne room set up. That there was the throne of the emperor, and then all the servant kings and the senate and the leaders would gather around him on their little thrones, which, again, I like to think John is kind of snarky, so I think John is trying to say what the emperor of Rome is doing is just a mere shadow of what the reality of God is. That this is just a cheap imitation. This is the reality where we see God on his throne. And this is I'll say this probably in every sermon, but this is one of my favorite things, is what is in front of the throne is a sea. But it's like glass, and it's clear as crystal, which I just try to imagine. You know, I worked at Camp Sebago, up on Sebago Lake for a couple years. And from my understanding, that's in like the top 5 or 10 cleanest lakes in all of America. It is a beautiful lake that you can see, I think, like at least 100 to 150 feet down into the bottom at certain points. And even that is not crystal clear. But to think of this sea that is like glass, that is like crystal clear, how smooth and how calm it must be. Now, every week we pray the Lord's Prayer. One of the lines in it is, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." This scene is showing us what earth is to be like, because this is how heaven is. In heaven before God, there is this still sea that is like crystal and like glass. This perfectly still sea. This is important to me. If you guys remember at homecoming last year when I first came out and I first preached for you guys, I preached on Psalm 130. "Out of the depths I cried to you, O God. Out of the depths you heard my plea." If you remember, I talked about the sea in that sermon. And I discussed the Hebraic idea of what the sea represented, and that it represented chaos, and how in the beginning of the world, the Spirit of God hovered over the sea, how he hovered over the chaos, and he created from it. The sea represents chaos. So a perfectly still sea means that chaos is being taken care of. That there is getting to the point where there is no more chaos. Later on in Revelation, we'll see out of the sea of the earth, a beast comes. And that beast causes chaos, and they just, yeah, that's for another week, but there's so much going on there. But here in heaven, here in the throne room, we see how it's supposed to be. Peace. The peace of God which stills even the craziest of seas and makes it clear and calm like crystal. Chaos is ceased in the midst of perfect worship. I think even about my own life sometimes, how there are just times where things are going absolutely crazy. I even think of this past weekend. I had an application for something due yesterday, and it was Friday night, just before midnight, that I was going over it again to recheck it, when I realized the last page said that I needed 3 letters of recommendation due on Saturday. that was sort of my response. It was a little deeper and a little more fist pounding. To which I had a minor moment of, I say minor, I had a pretty big moment of panic, where I did text a few friends and I was like I really wanted to do this. I thought this would be really great. Like, I really wanted to get this turned in. I can't believe that I missed this. So I emailed Dana Prush, the one that was running the program and who would be receiving the applications, and I said, "Hey, I understand if you can't, but if there's any way that I could get an extension for these letters of recommendation, that would be great. But if not, I understand that deadlines are deadlines." And I kind of had some moments of panic. To which I opened one of my prayer books, and I just prayed Compline, which is the the last prayers of the day for those that pray the daily hours. And as I was praying it, things were just calm. There was a peace that was given that, okay, if they extend the deadline, they extend the deadline. If not, they don't. I'll try again in a year or so. Because in the midst of worship, chaos is calmed. So the good news, Dana did extend it, and she was like, there's grace enough. So I was thankful for that. But at the end of Revelation, which we'll get to in however many weeks, we'll see that when heaven and earth becomes one, one of the things that John tells us is that the sea is no more. There is not even the possibility of chaos anymore. As Julian of Norwich has said, and I think this is a quote that describes what will come, sums it up pretty well. All will be well, and all will be well, and every kind of thing will be well. One of the other things I want to talk about is John is told, come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this. So John is being told that he will be shown what is to take place. But instead of being shown what is to take place, he's brought into the throne room. And he's then shown the one that holds what is to come. He sees the one that holds the throne, but he doesn't actually see what is to come yet. And so as he's looking at the scroll, he is thinking, and those around him are saying, who is worthy to open the scroll that contains the unfolding plan of the future that is to come? John begins to weep bitterly as he realizes that no one in heaven, nor anyone on earth, nor anyone under the earth could open it. As Polly was reading this, could you sense the drama that was building as John begins to weep bitterly? Could you feel this tension rising? Here's John being told, come on up and I'll show you what is to take place. It's written in this scroll, and John is taken up and he gets there and he's looking at the scroll, and all of a sudden he's like, well, wait. Who can open it? What? No, you brought me up here. I want to see what is taking place. Who can open this scroll? Who can declare what it is that God is holding in his hand? To which one of the elders speak up, wait, behold the Lion of Judah, the Root of David. The Lion of Judah has triumphed. To which one of the biggest plot twists in all of the Bible takes place. John turns and looks around, and instead of seeing a lion, he sees a lamb. Not only does he see a lamb, he sees a lamb that had been slaughtered. And this is the one that they're saying is the one that has triumphed. This is the one that has conquered. This is the one that is worthy. And it is this image, the image of the Lamb, that John will use throughout the rest of the book, primarily when he's talking about Jesus Christ. The Moravians, who influenced John Wesley, this is their seal. Our Lamb has conquered. Let us follow him. That is a great theme for the book of Revelation, a great summary of it. Our Lamb has conquered. Let us follow him. In fact, this slaughtered lamb is so worthy that thousands and thousands and tens of thousands upon tens of thousands of angels and the living creatures and the elders are giving him praise and honor and glory and worship. And then after that it says, every creature worships the Lamb. The creatures that are in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and even those that are in the chaos of the sea, all will worship the Lamb that was slain. Which leads us into something I think is extremely interesting. John does something in these two chapters that is just absolutely fantastic. John provides the church with a Christology that is a study of the being of Christ. You see, in 325 AD, the Council of Nicaea would gather together and they would debate the divinity of Christ and how Christ interplays with God and what that means. And is Christ fully human? Is he fully God? Is he both? How does that work? Is he God? And the Council of Nicaea would come together and debate that. And the church would declare, yes, Christ is God somehow. But John's already doing that a couple hundred years earlier here in the book of Revelation. He's declaring to us what the church would officially declare a couple centuries later, that Christ is a part of the Godhead, that Christ is indeed God, but Christ is not the Father, but the Father is God, but the Father is not Christ. If you remember back to Trinity Sunday, we played around with all that confusion. Thank you guys, you guys are already ahead of me. If we look at Revelation 4 and 5, they're direct parallels of each other. 4, 2b through 8a declares the glory of God, and then it moves into the worship of God, and then it gives us a hymn, and then it tells a narrative, and then it goes back into a hymn. If you look at Revelation 5, it also, both of them start, a little differently, but then it moves into the glory of the Lamb, to the worship of the Lamb, to a hymn of the Lamb, back into a narrative, and ending again with a hymn. These two chapters basically say the same thing in many ways. When I asked Bruce to read, he said, yeah, that's fine. I've read both of them already. They're pretty much the same. To which really, they pretty much are the same. The two are intimately connected, even to the point where does John first see the Lamb? Does anybody recall where it said that John first saw the Lamb? Standing at the center of the throne. Not in the center of the throne room, but the center of the throne, the very place of God. And John is skilled. John is much more skilled and much more careful than I am. John in the Jewish faith was monotheistic, and we believe that God is one. The Lord our God is one. And he kept to that. He stayed monotheistic, as we are a monotheistic faith. We believe in one God. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, one God. You see, whenever John mentions God and the Lamb doing something, it is always followed by a singular verb. It's not they, it's God and the Lamb is. God and the Lamb does. He is very intentional about saying the two cannot be separated, for they are one. What the Lamb does is what God does. And how the Lamb is how God is. which means our God is a God who would rather face death than commit violence against his creation. Our God is a God who triumphs not through getting even or through harming another. He is not a God who shows necessarily his power to force us to do things in a certain way, but rather it is through his death and his conquering of death by the power of his blood and resurrection that he triumphs and conquers. Our God is a God who literally loves us to death and beyond. Our God is a God who came to us and became like us, that we might join God more fully and that we might know him more fully. One of the most prolific theologians of our day is N.T. Wright. And N.T. Wright sums it up like this: if you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. So what is God like? God is like a slaughtered lamb who has conquered through his peaceful ways of love, grace, and mercy. All worship and honor and glory is due to him who saves us not in the waves of the empire, not through means of destruction and death, but rather through means of creation and life-giving. On Tuesday, we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in these chapters, but what I want to close with and what I want to end with is that these two chapters are the key to reading the entire book of Revelation. As we continue on in our study of this book, we are to remember that God and the Lamb is on the throne. God and the Lamb is worthy of worship. And that God and the Lamb conquers as one who has been slaughtered and is alive forevermore. And he calls us to join in that faithful witness. I invite you to take a moment to reflect on the fact that what Christ does is what God does. And that if we want to know God, we just need to look at Christ.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for joining us for this sermon podcast. We hope that the message has inspired you to draw closer to God each day. May God bless you as you serve him today.